Hello and welcome to another episode of Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. My guest today is Simon Alexander Ong. Simon is a personal development entrepreneur, coach, and public speaker. His clients are from all walks of life, but they share one trait. They all believe that the greatest investment you can make is in yourself. His work has seen him invited onto Sky News and BBC Radio London to be interviewed, while Barclays UK featured him in a nationwide campaign asking him questions on how families could embrace better lifestyle habits. Thank you so much for being here, Simon. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
So, Simon, you are now fully immersed in personal development and the desire to help individuals and businesses to be the best version of themselves. Isn't this where you started, though? Tell me a bit about your journey to reach where you are now.
Sure. So I was born here in the United Kingdom to Malaysian Chinese parents. And when I grew up, I had this mistaken belief that success was defined by my job title, be a banker, be a lawyer, be a doctor, be an accountant. And so I went to university, the London School of Economics. I graduated in the middle of 2007 at possibly the worst time to enter the financial industry. So out of those four options, I wanted to become a banker. I started with a company called Lehman Brothers, which collapsed 14 months after I started. Now, at the time, it was, of course, a very painful moment because all those hopes and dreams of where you want to take your career to, what you want to do in the future, being swept away from under your feet. But in hindsight, Paul, it was a beautiful blessing in disguise because it kickstarted, for me, the longest journey that we make as humans, the inches from our head to our heart. And while it is never an easy journey, it is the most important and fulfilling that we will ever embark on. And that led me to what I now get to do today. And it really started with asking myself some important questions. What did success mean to me? What did fulfillment look like? And what sort of impact did I want to have in the world? And I think the challenge, once we start getting clarity around those questions, is then to build our life around those answers. And that's what I've been doing in the transition from working for someone to working for myself with the work that I do as a coach, a speaker, and now an author.
So when you talk about that very short but very long journey from the head to the heart, measured in inches, but actually probably in metaphorical terms, it's light years. It's a very long and important journey to take. What are the sorts of things that you coach people about when they're trying to reconcile what they cognitively think they ought to be doing, but also what may make them feel happy or fulfilled?
I think the first step with any change or personal development in our life begins with awareness. And so really when I start working with clients is to deepen that awareness about themselves, because we cannot achieve true wisdom without knowing ourselves at a deep level. And so for me, it's really to point that focus inwards rather than outwards. You know, many of us when we grow up, we're told we've got to focus on career virtues, the company you work for, the status you hold, the money you earn. But actually, as we age and we get wiser, we realize it's far more important to focus on legacy virtues. And that's what I attempt to focus my clients' energy towards. And legacy virtues are things such as the story that you're writing, the impact that you're having on the lives of other people, and the contribution you're having in this world. And that lends itself to this idea of purpose. Because what I've noticed working with clients and speaking to audiences is that many of us are exhausted, not because we're doing too much, but because one, we're doing too little of the things that bring us joy and make us feel alive. And two, because we are running someone else's race. And so when we're running someone else's race, it's something we can never win, because someone is always determining the metrics and the signposts of where we should be. But once we take ownership of that and responsibility of that, that's when we truly begin living. And that's one of the first places I start working with clients.
So how does that, give us an example of it, because obviously people who listen to you are interested in what that journey looks like. So what are the sort of things that you do that give people better insights about what's their race and what's someone else's race, and how they want to be actually running it?
Sure. I think deep down, we all know what the answers are for ourselves. We just have to discover the courage to take action. Now, what I provide people with is really that space in which we can explore things at a deep level. And coaching really is about asking deep questions and then to step back and to allow the person in front of us to fill that space in with what their thoughts are. Now, in most cases, we don't give ourselves the time to slow down, to enter that space of stillness and reflect, yet that is so important. You know, one of the things I share with people quite often is that slowing down in a world that is speeding up is a superpower. Because what we appreciate in those moments of stillness is that silence is far from empty. It is full of the answers we seek, the clarity we want. And that process helps awaken our creativity, but also allows us to connect deeper with our true self. And so by creating that space and asking probing questions, it allows me to understand what is really important to them and also for them to get insight into multiple ways that they can take action. Because very often what we fail to understand is that we believe that there is only one reality. Yet in fact, there is multiple realities because we are designing realities for our thought. And when we realize and understand that, we can choose new thoughts, thereby creating new behaviors, choices, and actions. And so by really asking these open-ended questions such as, how would you know that you would have led a productive and a fulfilled life? We can then dig deeper to understand, first of all, what's going on in their mind, but also what gives them energy. And then we can start building out a path forwards that they can take towards that new life.
What percentage of your time do you spend with people helping them clarify their purpose and their path, the journey they want to embark on, versus having clarified their purpose and path and journey they want to embark on, how actually to embark on that journey, how to execute, and where are you finding that you add the most value and where are you spending most time with your clients?
Sure. I think the first part takes less time, understanding what is important to you, what your purpose is, because by and large, we know what is important to us. I think what holds us back is the fear and the doubt to take action towards what we know is important to us. So I think the second part is usually tougher for most of us because we can have a lot of enthusiasm, we can have a lot of energy or excitement and ideas, as many of us do at the beginning of a new year. But what we lack often is the commitment and the follow through and the execution on those ideas. And so it's really the action taking, the strategy and the how that I think stops a lot of people taking action on those ideas that they may have. So it's not that we don't know what we want, it's more that we may not have the courage or the motivation to want to follow through on the actions that can help us get there. And so for me, it's about bringing those two together. One, so that I have a vision that is magnetic in its nature. And two, understanding what can I do, the small steps, that's not going to overwhelm me, but I can commit to so I can experience that feeling of momentum.
So purpose is a central part of your practice, of the coaching, of the conversations you have with people. It seems to be central to your life as well. How do you define purpose and how important is it to the conversations you have with the people that you work with?
Sure. For me, purpose is crucial because it awakens one of the greatest sources of energy we have. You know, when you work for an organization or if you work for yourself, if you know your place and what you're working towards, then that brings a level of energy and excitement that you cannot replicate if you don't have a purpose. So for me, purpose is one of the first steps we need to get clarity on. Now, once we've established what that purpose is, I think this is a bit of a paradox here. You establish what your purpose is, that gives you context for the actions you take today, but at the same time, it's to detach your emotions from the outcome of that purpose, goal, or vision. Because very often what happens is that we might think, okay, this is my purpose, this is my goal, this is what I'm working towards, and then I'll be happy when that happens. But what does that mean we are in the present? Are we just going to float around being anxious, sad, angry, frustrated, thereby attaching all of our feelings to something that may or may not happen? Or are we focusing on enjoying the process and having fun with the journey, thereby also being content in the now? And that's when I noticed that actually people that go through this experience of flow, they're not only excited about a future that they're working towards, but they're also content in the now. And I think that is always a tough balance to achieve. But when we do that, we allow ourselves to enter that state of flow more frequently.
I want to ask you a question about purpose in a different way, which is purpose to achieve a set of specific career goals, a set of objectives that you would sort of see in the ordinary way that people kind of think about purpose, right? I can think of it here at The Conduit. We want to create a community, a pack of people who are passionate about positive social change. We want to deliver 200 talks. We want to deliver an impact investing opportunity to allow them to invest in the best companies. We want to build a sense of community. And then you want to achieve, obviously, a whole set of business and economic and financial metrics. So you can very quickly develop a sort of purpose statement in that form, which is kind of more of a kind of classic but enlightened corporate exercise. But then there's also a kind of purpose, which is, I want to really get inside you. And what's your purpose and what makes you happy and fulfilled? Because you can run the most purposeful company on the whole planet and still be unfulfilled or lonely or troubled. And so that those two different senses, do you encounter that with people you coach with? I'm sure that this is a perennial entrepreneurial dilemma.
If we look at organizations, and I think this is where purpose-led organizations and also purpose-led leadership comes in, is that it's one thing to have a mission statement or a vision that we share amongst our team and employees. It's another to really understand the people we lead and the way that they can contribute to that. So a purpose-led organization and purpose-led teams are led by people who understand how those individuals can contribute by utilizing their strengths, not just their functions. So if you employ someone just to do one role, what else about that person can we leverage so they can bring their whole self to work? And it's kind of like a film. When you go to the cinema and you watch a film, the reason why we are drawn into stories is because every actor and actress in that film, they know what their role is. So if you watch superhero films or films in which there are good and there are bad individuals in the film, each person is clear about their role in that film. And so when you go in, we are clear as well as to who is who and what they stand for. Now, if we can bring some of that into an organization, not only do we have a story in the organization, but each person also knows their own story and the role that they play within that bigger story. So if we can tap into that and allow them the space to show up as their full self, what happens is that it makes it easier for us to achieve those visions and missions. And ultimately, what I've realized is that while the goals and the vision and purpose is important, what's more important is what are the set of values, the habits, and the skills that will make that easy to achieve. Because while we won't always achieve our goals, we always achieve our habits. So there's a great saying by the coach John Wooden, and he said that if you can look in the mirror at the end of each day and honestly say to yourself, I've given my best today, a year from now, I guarantee you will enjoy the result. And that is a focus on the present, on what we can control, because it's that we do each day that compounds to the results that we achieve tomorrow.
So you recently wrote your book, Energize. You wrote it during lockdown. You did a launch here at The Conduit and many other places as well. Tell us a little bit about that, because in some ways that's a distillation, a little bit of your work and your life. You know, what caused you to write the book?
Well, first of all, it has been the greatest challenge I have faced for multiple reasons. You know, writing a book itself is always a challenge, but then when you throw in the fact that you have become a parent for the first time at the same time when you landed the book deal and the world had just entered its first lockdown, it made the process that much more challenging. But at the same time, it was a beautiful journey to self-reflect myself on my own path. And the way that I came to write about it is understanding that the most successful teams, organizations, and leaders were not necessarily the smartest, the strongest, or the fastest, but they were the best at sustaining themselves over the long term. They were the best at managing their energy because they knew that you cannot show up and give your best if you're always exhausted and depleted. And so I really wanted to write to that, but also share my own journey with how I was burnt out in the corporate world, working long hours in something that was spiritually unfulfilling, and how I went from that to something that I do today, which allows me to wake up and focus on possibilities over limitations and resourcefulness over lack of resources, and to share some of that insight and wisdom with people so they may do the same as well.
I want to ask you a question about where you love spending your time in the professional setting. Yeah. Do you like to work with senior high-performing leaders who have like kind of lost their way and help kind of direct them? Or do you like to work more with people who are early on in their career, who are ascending, who will become in the future those senior high-performing leaders, but you're sort of, they're at the in the foothills of the Himalayas. They're not yet, they're not yet about to summit. What gives you your most energy?
Well, I would say at a business level, I have been enjoying speaking a lot recently. When I first started out, I would say 80% of my revenue came from one-to-one private coaching. Now, as my profile has grown and the work I've done has expanded, I'm now doing a lot of my work on speaking. So 60, 70% of my revenue comes from speaking now. But in terms of the one-to-one coaching, I'm going to be honest, Paul, I actually enjoy them all because I work with an eclectic mix of people. So yes, there are people who are high performing in the upper echelons of management. There are also people who are on television, who are cooks in the kitchen, who run teams in different settings and communities, but also people, as you say, who are the foothills of the Himalayas. Now, the reason I enjoy having this exposure to quite an eclectic mix of people is that with it, it brings its own challenges. You know, with someone at the foothills, they're more open to want to explore. There's less to lose. With someone at the top, there's a lot more to consider. And so they may not be as open in the workplace because of politics or the culture or the situation they're operating in as someone who's right at the beginning and who has a lot that they want to achieve in their career. So for me, it's beautiful to understand each of these individuals' world so that we can create a path that will excite them to take action moving forward.
So I have two final questions. My first one is, when you have coached as many people as you have, you begin to see what's the signal and what's the noise, what's the pattern.
Yeah.
What's the most common conundrum that people come to you with when they come and they start articulating something? You go, I've seen this movie before.
I think it's contradictions a lot that I pick up very quickly now, because a lot of the time we may say something that is a story that we've been repeating again and again in our minds, but our body language and our nonverbal cues may give off something else. So for example, if I'm sitting with a client and they're telling me that they really want this job or they really want this opportunity, their body language may show signs of, I'm unsure. I'm not sure if this is right. And so I could pick that up and I would say, well, I just want to reflect something back to you. You say this is something you want, but I'm curious. It seems like there's a bit of reluctance to want to take that leap. Can you talk to me a bit more about that? And so noticing some of those subtle cues and clues that they may not notice themselves because they're so used to repeating the same thing, even though they're taking no action on it, allows me to kind of dig a bit deeper to really understand what are their blockers and what are the things that are actually preventing them moving forward. And very often it's because we give greater credence to the critic rather than the guide. And we all have two voices in our head, the critic and the guide. And when we give too much oxygen to the critic, that holds us back and means we even have self-doubt about if that is possible.
Final question. What's the most common mistake that effective leaders make?
The most common mistake that I've noticed that effective leaders make is they think they should know it all. They think they should know it all. And they're afraid of asking for help. That's the most common mistake I see. In fact, when I was in New York a couple of years before the pandemic struck, I had the opportunity to speak to Simon Sinek, and I asked him, I'm going to speak at a conference with Salesforce, and I'm curious, with your work around the field of leadership, what would be one advice that you would give those who are aspiring to be better leaders? And he said three words. He said, ask for help. Ask for help. And now the reason he said that is because as leaders, if we can demonstrate that we don't know it all, then we give permission to those that we lead to also ask for help, to also want to grow. But if we turn up and feel like we have to know it all, then what does that tell those that we lead? And often that can lead to saying the wrong things or doing the wrong things in defense of the fact that we don't want to include other people. So I think the common mistake is many leaders feel like they have to know it all and they're afraid of asking for help. But I think when we do show some vulnerability, and vulnerability does not make you any less of a leader, it simply makes you human, I think people crave that. And when there's a deeper connection with the leader and the employee, then what happens, we create a better culture for all of us.
Well, that's a wonderful note on which to end. It's clear to me that smart leaders who are asking for help should come to you, and they do. And I can understand why based on this conversation. So thank you so very much for your insights, and it's been a wonderful conversation. It's also delightful on a daily basis to see you here at The Conduit.
So, Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about Simon and his work, please do visit his website and go and buy his book. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.